At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's roll. This is Sports Rage. I am Gabriel Morenci. The pimps, the players, the hustlers, the podcasters, the people that bust them, and everybody else in between. It's the Twisted Tuesday, which means we've got a lot of football talk. But truth be told, we've got a lot of football talk every day on the podcast. Rick Saratella Day, Andrew McKinnis will step up and in the Rage Ribbon, Cam Stewart. And we're only 2 weeks in to the National Football League, but it's 2025 now. So this is like being 6 weeks in like 1995, right? Like, everything is accelerated now. Ask Deshaun Foster. Ask the Virginia Tech coach who's just been fired after 3 games in the NCAA college of football world. And speaking of 3 games, a lot of people believe that McDaniel could be fired after Thursday's game if the Miami Dolphins get humiliated by the Buffalo Bills, which is a distinct possibility. Rick Saratella, allaccessfootball.com. Rick, there's no shortage of subjects to break down at allaccessfootball.com or right here. Good to see you, my man. How you doing?
Hey, man, the infirmary report is growing by the minute here in the National Football League and the college football landscape. It's a lot going on, so let's dig into it, baby.
It's been an absolute bloodbath as far as injuries are concerned at the cornerback position. But before we attack that, your thoughts on the Monday night doubleheader, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Baker Mayfield just finds ways to win football games. It's amazing to me how little credit Coach Morris gets in the big picture in the National Football League, Rick. You don't win multiple division titles every year by accident. And I get their division isn't the best division in football, but you see this Tampa Bay Buccaneer team, they're not like a 1A elite team, but they can play with anybody in the league, in my opinion, Rick. We've seen them, right? They get to the playoffs, they trade punches, they fall short. They're a couple of players away, but you got to respect what they do down there in Tampa.
I'm a big believer. You know, Todd Bowles' defense always comes prepared. 7 different Buccaneers players recorded a QB pressure against that Houston offensive line. But Baker Mayfield's the story here. He's a top 10 quarterback as far as I'm concerned. You know, he went through a little bit of purgatory there with Carolina and the start of his career. But man, you talk about 11 play, 80 yard touchdown drive orchestrated by Mayfield once again with the late game heroics. We saw Emeka Ebuka, who I think now is the leader early on for the NFL Rookie of the Year. He had a touchdown. Mike Evans, 5 catches. The 1-2 combination. This was the worst running team in the NFL 2 years ago. Now they got a pretty good 1-2 punch in Bucky Irving and Rashad White. I believe in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers wholeheartedly. I think they're going to have a home playoff game. And, you know, this is going to be a team to contend with. Bowles, known for his defense, actually has a very competent offense to go along with it. And, you know, they're right up there as in terms of being a complete team. Like, the Philadelphia Eagles won a slobber knocker against the Chiefs. It wasn't pretty. They had some hits in the offseason. Like, Tampa Bay, I believe, is right up there with them.
The Atlanta Falcons were a football team that I liked as well in this division. I thought they could compete for the division. I think Tampa are like better than they are still, but I like what I'm seeing from Atlanta. They fell short in week 1 against the aforementioned Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Listen, Koo doesn't miss the late field goal. That game goes to overtime. Could have ended differently, but there's no ifs, ands, or buts in the National Football League. But with that being stated, Rick, you and I both believed, we both loved what the Falcons did in the draft defensively. Mm-hmm. And I heard Robinson talking about it during training camp, saying, you know, I know you're all not going to believe me, but I'm telling you what, man, our defense is really bringing it. And Robinson kept talking, and I pay attention to this stuff. And he said, yeah, defense beat us up pretty good in practice today. And he goes, that's never happened before. Like, they were open about the progress of the defense. And quite frankly, we saw that in their last football game on Sunday night.
Yeah, I think the Falcons will be in the hunt for a playoff spot. I think they'll be competing for a wild card. I think they'll be competing for the division. I just like Tampa Bay more with the overall team there. But Atlanta is healthier. I love what the GM has put together there. They did draft James Pierce and Jalon Walker in the first round. Pierce, I know, was a little bit banged up last week. But, you know, one thing we didn't mention about the Bucs, they were down Tristan Wirfs. They lost their other offensive tackle.
Yeah, Gaudy gets hurt in the game. And then so they're down two guys. They're shuffling guys around. And you mentioned Bucky Irving, too. Super impressive. I know, you know, it's early in the season right now. He's an undersized back. But the way this guy just sort of, you know, slickly sort of maneuvers through the tackles and deceptively picks up like 4, 5, 6 yards a chunk when he picks up the ball.
I thought Bucky Irvin was the most underrated player in the entire National Football League a year ago. And Rashad White can pound it between the tackles. And now you got two tackles banged up. Kalijah Kancey, he got injured last night. They're down Chris Godwin. So if the Bucs can get healthy, clearly they have more talent. But Atlanta, they've got a young nucleus there. Michael Penix, Bijan Robinson, you know, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, all these players that they've added through the draft. Now they've turned their attention on the defensive side. And Billy Bowman, the fourth round pick, is making plays at the safety spot all over the field out of Oklahoma. Keep an eye out for that young man. He is an emerging playmaker.
Now, Rick, you can never judge a player's career after a couple of games. Unfortunately, many people do, especially if you're a quarterback. But what about Ashton Jeanty? You just mentioned Rookie of the Year. It does not appear as if Ashton Jeanty is going to win Rookie of the Year. And I didn't think he was to begin with. Like I said, it's super early, but I warn people, he's not Saquon Barkley. He's not Bijan Robinson, in which he's like super dynamic and can carry your football team in a National Football League. Do you think I'm wrong in overreacting early here? I like him. He's a really good back, but I didn't think he was a generational back.
No, I mean, listen, we sat here and talked about it in April. It's one thing to run wild through the MAC. It's another thing to do it.
You're not playing Hawaii and Wyoming now. It's different. Yeah. A lot different.
Yeah.
And Robinson at least did it at Texas, Rick. Played in big-time game. Played against big-time team. Like, we saw him against other NFL talent. Not to disrespect the Mountain West, Rick, but you're the draft guru. How many players from the Mountain West are in the National Football League right now? Not many.
That's right. And, you know, this is now three games, really. If you go back to that playoff game against Penn State, that defense was littered with Sunday players, and Ashton Jeanty just could not get going against that Penn State Nittany Lions defense. Now, he had, I think, 11 carries for 43 yards last night, 3.9 yards per carry, 72 yards through two games. But I think it's worth pondering the question at the very least. Like, maybe we put too much stock and emphasis in what he did at the collegiate level. And I'm starting to think now that maybe there's some truth behind it.
And I look back to, and listen, I'm not dismissing ever drafting a running back, but if you're the Raiders, you have a lot of needs. And running back wasn't the most pressing need right now. And I think they're kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't, in a sense, Rick. Jeanty's also the type of running back. He's used to getting the ball 20, 25 times, right? You know, Rick, it takes running backs, you know, they've got to get into a rhythm. They've got to get stopped a bunch of times before they pop one. And they can't really give them the ball 20 times if their production isn't there on the first 10 times they give them the ball, right? They're in a weird situation with him.
Yeah, and if you're playing catch-up ball, like Pete Carroll does like to run the ball, but if you're playing catch-up ball and it's hard to get, you know, this is a guy that's used to 30-plus carries a game, and he had 11 last night, so it is hard to get the momentum going, but you know, at the same time, when you're a pro, you've got to maximize your opportunities. And he has not done that just yet.
Geno Smith, it was a train wreck last night, 24 of 43, 180 yards, three interceptions, not to mention numerous open receivers and pass balls, missed passes, et cetera. I get it. It's early once again, but, you know, you have to look at the Raiders' makeup and wonder, like, just what the hell are they doing? Right, they're not good now, and they're not rebuilding for the future. I mean, this really is a poorly managed and a poor vision for a football team, in my opinion. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I think the fact that your head coach is 73 years old, he wasn't looking for a rebuild. So he said, go get me
74 now, Rick. It was his birthday.
That's right. He lost on his birthday.
That
so
poor bastard. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he's looking around like, hey, we need a quarterback. Hey, we need a running back. Hey, we need everything. And, you know, like they have Brock Bowers, but he can't do it all. He had 5 catches for 38 yards, and he's just one building block. But, you know, there is a long-term plan. I don't know what it is. Tom Brady might know better than I do. And you saw Brady up there in the coaching booth. I heard Pete Carroll talking about, hey, he calls Chip Kelly 3 times a week to go over the playbook and break down film, give him notes. So I'm sure they're in good hands with the Brady bunch. But this year is going to be the Raiders taking a lot of lumps in a very competitive AFC West, which I think is the best division in the NFL from top to bottom. And, you know, it's going to be hard for them to string together some victories here. And you mentioned Geno Smith, who's just a terrible downfield passer, 0 for 12 last night on balls that traveled over 10 yards through the air. All 3 of those interceptions coming on such passes.
That's what I don't get, that Pete Carroll knows Geno Smith, and I'm just a jackass, dumb talk show host, degenerate football bettor. And I know that Geno Smith is good at the West Coast quick hit offense, and I know that he's not good at throwing the football down the field. So you're asking a quarterback that's not very good to throw the football down the field, throw the football down the field to a bunch of wide receivers who, quite frankly, are terrible. And I got no issue with Myers. Myers is okay. But, Rick, can anyone imagine, like, going to a game show and ask people, who are the receivers, who are 5 receivers on the Las Vegas Raiders right now?
Like, Trey Tucker.
Like, it's a joke, bro. Like, seriously. Like, maybe yeah. Tom Brady should spend less time, you know, playing flag football in Saudi Arabia and going to the whiteout parties and everything. And I also heard, too, and I retweeted the story last night. I remember when it went down that the Raiders brass originally wanted to sign Sam Darnold as a free agent in this offseason.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
That, you know, Geno Smith was not their idea, that it was actually, hey, you know, what do you think about Sam Darnold? Like, basically, Mark Davis wanted Sam Darnold and said, hey, Sam Darnold's available. I like him. You know, he's got a big arm. And Tom Brady said, Sam Darnold got lucky in Minnesota. He's really not that good. And then end up with Geno Smith. I'd rather Sam Darnold than Geno Smith. And I think that McDonald knew this as well in Seattle.
Well, I mean, I think you can pick your poison there. I'm not a huge Sam Darnold believer. I think last year was an abbreviation, and Kevin O'Connell gets the most out of his quarterback. So I just think the Raiders were in between a rock and a hard place. You had Carr retire on them. Aiden O'Connell, who's always injured, has been pretty much a roller coaster ride. And so, like, Geno, I think it's a hold the fort guy. Now, they did draft Cam Miller, who's been bouncing around the practice squad. That was handpicked by Brady. I don't think he's the long-term answer. But, you know, looking ahead to the 2026 NFL draft, I totally expect the Raiders to be in play for a rookie quarterback.
They have to be. You know, and I guess it's just going to, you know, be a situation in which it's not even going to be Pete Carroll to decide. It'll be Brady, because how long is Pete Carroll actually going to be there? Listen, Carroll's going to, you know, he's going to grind out some wins because he's a good coach. And when they play really bad teams, like they beat the Patriots, they were able to win. But, you know, this division is tough, and the Chargers are taking a stranglehold of it early right now. So what about Tom Brady? Do you believe there's some big conflict of interest here? It is strange to see. I don't want to overreact because I don't think, like, opposing coaches are, like, giving him the playbook when he does the games on TV. But it is very strange to see a a guy who is such a high impact analyst who does games weekly, who meets with coaches weekly and opposing players weekly. And then there he is, not just as sort of like, hey, I'm Serena Williams. I own a couple of percentage points of the Dolphins and I'm in a luxury suite. No, like you're up there with coaches with headsets on and stuff, bro. That is a little bit different.
It's bizarre, dare I say disturbing. I mean, wasn't he on the Commanders broadcast last week, and now they're going to face Washington next week? So, you know, listen, they're not giving away top secret information in these production meetings, but they are getting valuable insight in terms of game plan and scheme. And there is, you know, the human factor element. Like, Brady has friends all around the league, so you think he's not picking their brain, prying information? To me, it's a total competitive advantage.
Oh, think about the little things, Rick, that he could just pick up. Oh, yeah, man, the DB's got a bad hamstring. Like, you know what I mean? I picked that up from – there's so many little things that he can get without them even realizing he's getting stuff on them.
And they change the rules. They're catering to him.
Especially for a guy, Rick – who's been through, let's be real. There's a story with him and Belichick. Like, Brady has shown he is not above stretching the rules and going past the distance, Rick. And I say this as, you know, as a Michigan guy, and it is what it is, but he's shown that he is willing to cheat. Let's just call it off what it is.
Well, the old adage, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. But I mean, I just don't understand how the other 31 teams are tolerating this. And on top of it, you had the NFL change the rules this year for him to make it even more catered to Brady's access and be down there on the field, be inside those production meetings. I don't know. It's bizarre to see him up in the coach's booth. He's the owner. He's the coach. He's a broadcaster.
If Michael Vick was the coach, probably not, right? Like, if would anyone else get away with this? Like, would John Gruden get away with this?
I think it's because the NFL wants Tom Brady to be so heavily involved. You mentioned the Saudi Arabia
thing. They want him associated with the NFL for his life, right? Yeah.
Right, and now he's going to go over in Saudi Arabia to expand the international footprint. Like, that's what the NFL is all about. So I don't think Park Avenue really cares, but I just don't understand why the other 31 owners have stayed silent on this matter. To me, it's clearly a competitive advantage. Now, the Raiders stink, so maybe people don't care, but if it was the Raiders 2-0 in first place in the AFC West, maybe it becomes a bigger story.
I think Rick is bang on there. If the Raiders are really good and they're a playoff team, people would definitely be opposing coaches, owners, would definitely be saying something. I think they probably say behind the scenes like you do. Yeah, I'm not going to complain now because they're not very good, right? And, you know, I think every owner sort of has something that they don't want to be discussed. You see it in the NBA. It's interesting right now, Rick. Pablo Torre has basically caught the Clippers paying Kawhi Leonard under the table. And pretty big money, too, like $27 million here, like fake landscaping company, some pretty shady stuff that goes on. And it's pretty interesting, Rick. I haven't heard one NBA owner complain and say, there's got to be something done about this, right? You know sports. There's always, like you said, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. Or, hey, listen, everybody's doing it. We're not really cheating. I mean, everyone's doing it and nobody says anything about it. Sort of like doctoring baseballs, right? I remember in the playoffs a couple of years ago, Cora got really all mad and started freaking out. He goes, I see the pitchers on, you know, I'm seeing the pitchers. They're putting, you know, they're doctoring the ball. And the Red Sox pitchers told him after the game, shut up, coach. We do it too. Like, you know, every pitcher does this. So, like, don't talk about this. So, you know, that happens often. And
well, no Spygate, right? I mean, that was a pretty well-known thing.
Yeah.
And Eric Mangini had a personal vendetta. It took Mangenius to speak up.
He was the only one that snitched. He was the one that snitched it. No one else did.
That's right.
And that was a baseball guy. No, dude, you think no one in baseball knew about the Houston Astros? Come on. They all knew. They just didn't say anything.
Absolutely.
Point blank. I mean, you're naive. That's why I never bitch about the Astros story that much. I laughed about it. I was like, dude, like, whatever, man. Every baseball team is stealing signals. So they were using garbage cans. It's so ridiculously stupid, but buzzers and God knows what they were doing. Altuve wouldn't take his shirt off.
Yeah.
That was the best. Oh, my wife doesn't like seeing my tattoos. Shut up.
Yeah, the wire.
That was the best excuse. That was a pretty good excuse, actually, pretty quickly. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah, that, my wife. Yeah, she got mad at me when I took my shirt off because of my tattoos. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, okay, yeah, that's what it was. You mentioned rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year. Ibuka right now is a co-favorite with Tyler Warren. So you got Ibuka at plus 400, Tyler Warren at plus 400, Genty at plus 450, Cam Ward plus 550, McMillan plus 650. Speaking of Tyler Warren, the Indianapolis Colts are 2-0, kind of gratuitously and luckily after that game against Denver. But 2-0 is 2-0. Rick, what do you say about Daniel Jones's start with the Colts?
Well, you know, I watched every game of the last 5 years in the New York Giants, and he never had a game like he's had in the two games with the Colts. So you wonder about the coaching. Coaching matters. We talk about that all the time. I heard Daniel Jones on the Pat McAfee show talk about the level of preparation. I don't think it was a dig at the Giants. I think it was just something in his career where he didn't know about how to prepare. And the Giants were so quick to run Eli Manning out of town. I also heard Jordan Love talking about how thankful and grateful he was to sit behind Aaron Rodgers for 3 years just to learn how to be a pro.
Yeah.
And so they were quick to run Eli out of town.
And also, Rick, I know it sounds cliche, but who is the quarterback, another quarterback that I heard say this? It'll pop into my head in a second. He goes, you know, it's a big difference when the coach doesn't hate you and actually likes you.
Yeah, wow.
You know what I mean? And like you said, I'm not saying Dable hated Daniel Jones, but let's be real, right? There was a very, you know, it was not a good relationship. And I get it. It's a new relationship, but Steichen's very positive with Daniel Jones, right? He supports him. He says, I believe in you.
Well, and I think he builds an offensive game plan around Daniel Jones' skill set, right? And the Giants were asking him to carry the team on the back, where Indianapolis is having him manage the game, working the short to intermediate parts of the field. He's been very efficient. It also helps that Jonathan Taylor has been looking at about as good as he has ever in his career. So they have a competent run game, something else that was lacking after Saquon Barkley departed in New York. And I think he did learn and grow in Minnesota. Now, they beat up a pretty terrible Dolphins team. And if it wasn't for that encroachment call on the field goal there, then, you know, Denver wins that game and Indianapolis is sitting at 1-1. So I'm going to pump the brakes a little bit on Danny Dimes. But, I mean, listen, I think it speaks volumes to how poorly they're doing in New York. It speaks volumes to how good of a coach Shane Steichen is. And, listen, give the Colts some credit, man. This new ownership on the sidelines, they've created a new culture there. You can feel the excitement. And there's something brewing in Indianapolis. We'll see if they can sustain it.
It was Trey Lance. It popped in my head just for the
there
record.
There you go. Yeah.
Like Trey Lance this year in camp, they asked, like, wow, you're really playing great. And he basically said, he said, Harbaugh believed in me and just told me, you're good. Like, and he built me up. And he talked about, you know, in the past, I kind of got, you know, taken, picked apart more than built up.
And Mac Jones is another one, because that report from the Providence Journal came out last week where they said Belichick just was so infuriated by Mac Jones, he stopped speaking to him altogether. And Mac Jones said, they stopped coaching me in New England. Now he steps in with the Kyle Shanahan offense, and look at what he did this past week. So coaching does matter in the NFL.
That's interesting you say that, because I'm not a big Mac Jones fan, and I look back at times with New England in which he would walk off the field and kind of look like really – angry, and he'd go sit alone and stuff like that. But then you find out after the fact that the coaching staff wasn't even talking to him, so of course he was upset, right? Like, he knew, he's walking off and he's thinking, what a clown show this is, right? Man,
right.
Belichick is one petty dude, isn't he? Huh? Like, you know, the stuff about like the Patriots, they're not, you know, he's not letting the Patriots scout his players. Isn't that insane?
So he got overruled by – he wanted to keep Matt Patricia on as offensive coordinator, as absurd that it sounds. Robert Kraft overruled that, right? And then Kraft anointed Gerard Mayo as the coach in waiting, and Belichick got so pissed off that he didn't talk to Gerard Mayo either that entire season. And Mayo was his defensive coordinator. So, I mean, egos destroy organizations, and Bill Belichick's got a pretty big one.
Rick has some great stuff with Rick Saratella. So, offensive rookie of the year, are you buying in that it is going to be Ibuka? He's solid. You know, he didn't put up massive numbers last night, but you know, as the season goes on, the opportunities are going to be there. The kid gets open. Godwin's hurt. Evans still good, but Evans isn't, 22 years old anymore. I brought up when Danny Jones and the Colts with Warren, because you got to wonder, they're not going to win every week, the Colts. But if you had to pick right now, would you say Buka's the rookie of the year? He's plus 400, and we talked about him before the year started, man. He was like 12-1 then.
Yeah, I do like Emeka Ebuka, because we talked about it again in April. He was the most polished wide receiver amongst the rookies, and you're seeing that. Like, Ohio State's been a wide receiver factory. Just look around the league at all the wide receivers that the Buckeyes have produced, and Godwin is going to miss a handful of games. Ebuka is going to have something to say in this offense. He's going to play a key role. I could see 1,000 yards, 7-8 touchdowns. I was pretty high on Omarion Hampton, too, but we saw that fumble there last night. He really hasn't gotten the train off the tracks. He's splitting time with Najee Harris, so I would lean towards Ebuka. Tyler Warren, I think, is going to post some big numbers. I don't think Indianapolis will continue this high-octane offense, but I think Tyler Warren has to be at least considered. And anytime you have a starting quarterback like Cam Ward, who I think has played pretty well, he's been hampered by some drops, though. And I think Cam Ward, I like what I see. He had one throw last week rolling out on the run and just unleashed a cannon opposite end zone for a touchdown. So those would be my leading candidates. But you have to say Emeka Ebuka is the leader of the pack right now.
Rick, before we get you out of here, a couple of quick hits. Andrew McKinnis and Cam Stewart's going to step up and in a couple of minutes here. The brotherly shove yearly conversation has begun. And we're only into week two right now, and everyone's really crying hard about this. And I'm surprised, actually, that one of their league partners in ESPN was as vocal about it, in which, numerous ESPN personalities saying that.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holiday install to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
It should be banned, that the play should never have happened. Adam Schefter said, this game against the Chiefs was one for the Eagles in the offseason when the owners, they ridiculously decided not to ban the play. I'm not a big fan of the play, but I don't think it's illegal. I mean, if they line up offside, freaking call it. But with that being stated, if it's such a, slam dunk easy play or it's this or that, then copy it. How come nobody copies it? Not one other team in the National Football League does it. Seriously, not one team out of the other 31 teams does the exact same thing. It says, well, let's just do the same thing. It can't be stopped. I'll tell you what, I know as a Buffalo Bill fan, we tried to do it a couple of times last year. It didn't work for us. It wasn't, Josh Allen, 6'5", he got stuffed on a tush push in a playoff game against the Chiefs. So I don't want to hear that, it's unfair. Because no one's stopping you from doing it. There's not a bigger copycat sport and league than football in the NFL. Like, there's no shame. Like, no one invents anything. They'll copy anything and go, look, this works. Let's copy it. How come no one copies it, Rick? Because they don't want to get their quarterback killed.
Well, I think they do try to copy it. They just can't do it. And I used to think that Jason Kelce was the secret ingredient, but it's been just as effective without him. And now we know it's Jalen Hurts. So let me ask you this. How many other quarterbacks in the NFL are in the weight room squatting 500 pounds?
Because that's what Jalen Hurts. 700. I think it's 700, to be honest. He actually won the squat competition on the Oklahoma Sooners. He beat the lineman guys. So I said the same thing because I heard Kelce talk about it. He goes, I hate that play. He goes, dude, you think about it. He goes, you're literally under 4,000 pounds of weight. He goes, I couldn't breathe once. I thought I was going to die. And he goes, you can't, like, you're begging people to get off of you, and they're not going to listen to you, right? And the other team is mad that you got the first down, so they're going to do stuff in the pile. Like, they're pushing down there. They're gouging. And I said the same thing. Jalen Hurts is one of the few dudes that can handle, like, thousands of pounds on his back when he's in under that pile.
Yeah, and he was squatting 500 coming out of Oklahoma, so he probably did get stronger. Maybe he's squatting 700 pounds now, but I would – dare to say that there's not another quarterback in the NFL doing that. Now, I will say this. You mentioned the offsides. Andy Reid, who is on the NFL competition committee, he was irate over the offsides play because it was non-reviewable according to the NFL rules on that particular play. You cannot review offsides on the tush push. So I do expect, if they don't ban it, which I don't think they should because it's a very good football play, but if they don't ban it, then they're going to at least, I think, consider tweaking the rules or altering it so that you can challenge the offsides penalty, because that did work in the Eagles' advantage there. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, the tush push remains undefeated. It's probably the best play in football. You need 2 yards, no problem. Jalen Hurts is going to put on a Superman cape.
Last question, Rick. Do you think McDaniel will be coach of the Dolphins on Friday morning?
I don't. I think he'll get served the pink slip. I saw him in his press conference. He looked like a defeated man, couldn't even raise his head, and whatever was coming out of his mouth made no sense at all. I think he's a dead man walking at this point, and I think Buffalo could put up a 50-burger and blow him out of the water.
What came out of his mouth was, to win the game, you got to win the game. You can't lose the game. That's what he said. He's like you said, he's a lost man. Like
he was trying to channel his inner Herm Edwards, but it didn't come out.
Yeah, so. He was like, you know, we all got what you can't make mistakes to where you got to make winning plays. Like, you know, I actually feel bad for him because they could have, should have won the game. Achane steps out of bounds like an idiot. Like, there was no reason to do it. They would have won the game, and it's a different scenario. Instead, Buffalo probably whacks them 35-3, and it's probably lights out for McDaniel on Friday morning, but he'll end up as an offensive coordinator down the road. Rick Saratella, All Access Football. Rick, what do you got going on before we get you out of here?
Yeah, we got the NFL Draft Watch going on over at the website. We're updating our big board. We had the Scout Notebook yesterday, the world-famous All-Access Football Report on Wednesday, the Draft Insider on Friday. Buckle up, hunker down. It's your year-round coverage for NFL Draft and everything pigskin. Appreciate
you. Rick Saratella, always good, my man.
Love you, Gabe.
There's Rick Saratella kicking it with us. All right, we bring Andrew McKinnis in and Cam Stewart in. Monday night doubleheader last night. And both games, interesting. The Buccaneer game started off as a track meet and then completely slows down. Sunday night's game was a disaster. So it wasn't a great primetime slate to end the week this week in the National Football League. But the Buffalo Bills and the Miami Dolphins are up next. Andrew McKinnis steps up. And good to see you, McKinnis. How you doing today?
Good to see you, Gabe. How about those Packers, man? 2-0. Looking pretty good. But as far as those primetime games, people should have been thanking everything they could have when they saw Buffalo, Baltimore, and some of these good primetime games, because I think primetime unders might be back.
Well, you know what? We got some good ones coming up. Monday night, the Detroit Lions and the Baltimore Ravens. Ravens are now 5.5-point favorites. It was 6 last night. And even the Sunday nighter I find intriguing. The Kansas City Chiefs are in a desperate situation. The Giants are always desperate. So we got 2-0-2 football teams here on Sunday night football. So it will get better if you look at the primetime matchups. We got some better ones down the road. Cam, how did you end up doing with the games last night?
Yeah, not very good, Gabe. I can't lie to you. I did good in the first game, but I was on the Raiders last night, and that was an absolute debacle. So, you know, I should have listened to people on the Chargers. I thought they'd keep it close, but not my best work. Morency had a great week, but let's just say Monday night was not as smooth.
This is, you know, that was why Cam, Geno Smith isn't in Seattle anymore.
I get it. That was bad, Geno.
I posted last night during the game. I said, you see why McDonald didn't want to commit to Geno Smith long-term? Yeah. Right? And I know it was almost amicable. It was almost one of those, yeah, I should probably leave, and, you know, you're not going to extend me type of deals. But the thing with Geno is he's okay sometimes. He's pretty good. Yeah, he's serviceable. Or he's really bad. He's never great. You know what I mean? Like, you at least,
yeah, he's inconsistent.
Like, he's never great. It's either like, yeah, he's okay. He played all right. You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, yeah, we won the game because of Geno Smith. And then you get other games where it's like, dude, and Cam, you saw it with Seattle. It's the red zone. He gets into the red zone. He turns the ball over. He throws in a double coverage. He can't throw the ball like further than 10 yards with any accuracy. It's like, he's a quick hit, quick quarterback. I'm not burying him and saying he's the worst quarterback in the league, but that's the bad side of Geno Smith, and you just can't win a football game like that.
Great astute comment. That's the thing about Geno. What does he do poorly? Touch on the ball. Like when you're running that fade to the corner with a perfect rainbow, he'll like throw a laser beam. Yeah, you're right. Gabe, over the middle, 30, 40 yards. He can run a little bit with his legs, but red zone, great point by you. One of the worst quarterbacks in the red zone, Seattle said, see ya.
We got Andrew McKinnis, who hated Jordan Love, but now he pretends he loves him.
I love my quarterback. I love this guy.
Remember, Jordan Love. I'm not gonna look. Here we are right now. But yeah, great start for the Packers, McKinnis. And, listen, they shut down the Detroit Lions. And what did people say after that? Oh, Ben Johnson's not there. And Jared Goff is lost without Ben Johnson. Blah, 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 blah. Well, how's Ben Johnson doing in Chicago, number one? And was Jared Goff lost last week against the Chicago Bears when they hung 50-plus on the board? No, he wasn't lost. Jaden Daniels in the Washington Commander offense, completely. To be honest, they look like the Raiders did last night against the Packers. Like, Jaden Daniels could not complete a pass. Nobody was getting open. Like, we can talk about Micah Parsons all we want to the addition to the football team, but it's really been contagious. Like, the secondary's playing great. Like, great defensive play for the Packers. And not just Parsons. Like, they suffocated two of the better offenses in the National Football League so far this year.
Well, like Micah Parsons, say he was talking about it in an interview, pretty much saying like, hey, look, I understand that nobody really shows up to games to watch the defense. But he's like, man, if we can show up and get stops and make big plays on defense, we can get the offense going and the crowd will cheer for that. I think the big story for this game was the defense. Like, maybe they didn't completely shut down the Commanders, but they did a really good job in getting those timely stops, Gabe, that I was really impressed about. And, going into that game, I'll tell you, I'm one of those kind of guys. Like, some people love betting on their own teams. For me, I usually don't bet on my own teams very much because it's kind of like my one escape that I don't, Like, I can still be a fan. But with this Packers team, that last week, I said it on the show, I loved the -3.5 number. And it wasn't just because of the offense. It was because I trusted the defense there for them to shut down the Commanders. Also, looking at the kind of the average age for these teams, the funny thing is, it was actually a young team versus an old team. And I'll tell you what, the young team was the team that looked prepared. The young team was the one that actually looked ready in that
McKinnis,
game. Kind of interesting.
I brought that up last week, actually, before the game. It's interesting that you bring this up, in which the Green Bay Packers have the younger starters in the National Football League, averaging 24.8 years old. The Washington Commanders have the oldest average starters in the National Football League, averaging 27.13 years old. And I think, McKinnis, I kind of dismissed it. It was brought up, and it was like short week, right? Short week, Thursday night football game. Just sort of logically, who would recover faster? Who would be more suited to play a football game 3 days after just playing a game? The younger team. The younger team. And, it's funny you bring that up about the age, because I actually talked about it. No one else did. So I'm like, that's why I'm like, wow, I don't know. He's talking about the age of these teams. Unless, I was tweeting about this. But I was talking about the age of the teams. But McKinnis, I will admit, I kind of dismissed it because I was like, it's week two, so who cares? They're not, like, fatigued yet. And also, I was like, 27 years old isn't, like, really that old. Like, you know what I'm saying? Compared to 24, I was like, is there really a difference here, 27, 24? Well, the younger team won. And I was thinking, Andrew and Cam, moving forward, McKinnis, I was thinking, I want to take a look at this, actually, every Thursday and look at, like, who's the younger and who's the older team and see what happens here. And I bet you the younger team wins more on Thursdays, guys.
That's and a what's great funny, point, Ken. I was thinking about it last week.
Yeah. I actually was smart enough to get into it.
Yep.
But I was dumb enough to dismiss it, saying, it's only 3 years. I was wrong.
No, and football is one of those games, guys. You guys know it's hard. Like, you're in the trenches. right now. We're not even into the winter. It's hot out there with all the equipment on, other things like that. Older guys can get beat down. Gabe, look at us. We're seasoned thoroughbreds at doing these shows for a while. And the younger guys are like, hey, how you doing? Hey, we still do it. We're the old grinders, but I'm with you. We have to come up with a database and actually keep statistics to this, and then we'll see if it's a trend we can bet on.
This Thursday, it's the Bills and Dolphins. The Bills are technically a little older than the Dolphins, but like
Dolphins don't count,
but not really. Like it's 25-6-2 to 25-1-3. So their average starters are both 25 years old on the Buffalo Bills. Interesting to see this, man. The NFL, it's a young man's league, this league, huh? Like the oldest average starters is 27, and that's Washington. The second oldest team in the National Football League, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Third oldest team, San Francisco. Look at San Francisco, already a bunch of injuries, old dudes. Interesting, Atlanta are the fourth oldest team. I wouldn't have guessed that. Houston are the fifth oldest team. I would not have guessed that either. The Saints, yeah, I would believe that the Saints are an old team. They're right there. The Lions, Arizona are an older team. For the record, youngest, you know what's crazy and scary? So the youngest team in the NFL is the Green Bay Packers. The second youngest team in the NFL are the Jacksonville Jaguars. The third youngest team in the NFL, and this is a scary and annoying, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, God.
Yeah, the Eagles average, they're only 25 years old.
That's crazy. Yeah, they're the Seahawks, Morenci. Are they like 6 or 7? They got a lot of young guys.
They're like in the middle.
Yeah.
Now, you know what? They're sort of, you know, they're actually, they trend towards they trend younger than older actually now. Mm-hmm. But it's a little not really meaningful, dude. They're 25.23 years old. There's like a chunk of teams, you know, like basically like half the league seem to all be like 25. You've got a couple of 27s and 26s, and like Green Bay are the only team in the league that is under the 25 years old barrier at 24.80. That's their average starter. But speaking of numbers, yeah. 7.5 is the new number for the Packers against the Browns. It's an inferior opponent, but now it's their first road game. Are you in love with the Packers this week, or are you going to pass on it? What's your take as the Packer McInnes?
I mean, as far as the numbers concerned, it still seems like a number that I could be talked into getting on here. But when you kind of look at the spot play here and the situation, I'm a believer that I think that last week's score for the Cleveland Browns might not be indicative of how the game went. Like, I thought that they played all right defensively. I thought they had a couple decent stops. You know how upset people were that Derrick Henry didn't get a touchdown last week? Like, on the goal line, and what did they have, like, 4 tries to get 3 or 4 yards, and they got stopped? I think that the score started off pretty close. Cleveland was hanging around. They were covering, and then it kind of got run up towards the end of the game. Situationally, if you want to talk about flat spot this, all that, throw out the handicapper terms that you always hate on, Gabe, I think this could be one of those ones here for the Packers. But the number to me still is a little bit too low. So for that reason, I'll probably stay off at this point. I might just play some props in this one. But, you know, situationally, I feel it could be a Brown spot to hang around. But at the end of the day, the number, I think, is still a little bit too low. So I'd probably be on the Packers. Maybe for me, what I would do is I would look for an in-game number on the Packers. You know, if we see the Browns come out to a start, we see them hanging around, even maybe get a good number or bet the second half on the Packers. The Browns bend, don't break, you know, try and play the very, very well field position. I'll tell you one thing that's been really good here. I know you're like the props here. Joe Flacco over on passing attempts. Is this team ever going to be able to run the ball if they find themselves down 10 points in every game they're in? I actually like betting passing attempts more than I like betting completions. You don't even have to worry about them completing the passes. Just bet on the game script being no runs.
I like your style. Like you said, you don't have to worry about completing the passes. But the way things went for me for the last 48 hours, if I took Joe Flacco completion to the over, he'll get hurt in the first quarter. And I'll lose my bet. Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills, McInnes, on Thursday. It was 12.5. It's now 11.5. You know, you could make an argument that Buffalo could, you know, just drill them, name their score type of deal, win 42-3, and get McDaniel fired. You could also argue that they're division rivals, that Miami have hung around with Buffalo in the past. and that this is absolutely positively, you know, the coach's job is on the line. I tend to believe that they've given up. You know, I know they nearly won the football game, but I'm just saying, if you're McDaniel, he's a smart dude. He knows he's getting fired, right? It's just like inevitable. Like, when is it going to happen? You know what I mean? He's like one blowout win away from the other team, basically, like smoking him from being let go. There's got to be a lot of anxiety and just sort of tension and depression in the building. Yet they're pros, so they're going to dial it up one last time. But what do you think happens on Thursday? Is it the end for McDaniel, or do the Dolphins show us something, McInnes?
I think Devon Achane ruined my Sunday is what I think. I needed the Miami Dolphins to win that game. As far as this week, look, I think it's one of those – it's always interesting. I feel like it's I don't know, karma. I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is. But, like, across all sports, NBA, NHL, NFL, it seems like whenever a coach is on the hot seat, somehow, like, the best team in the league is, like, their next game. Like, why can't they be playing the Saints this week or some week, you know, just to gift them a win or at least a closer matchup? I guess they had the Patriots last week, who they should have probably beat. But Gabe, I don't think that Miami hangs around here. I think if I'm betting anything to do with the Dolphins, I'm going to be going right back to the Tyreek Hill props, because Tyreek is the only thing that can save Tua, and Tua is the only thing that can save Mike McDaniel. So I'd probably be looking back at props for Tua, because you know how he is, freaking out on the sideline, jumping up and down, not getting targeted. I mean, that was I bet him week one receiving yards lost. Went back to it week two, and he hit it probably in the first half. And I'll probably go for it third straight week because, you know, look at that point spread. You see the number there. I think that we're going to have to look at player props. I'll tell you one guy for the Buffalo Bills that I'll be on who's done really well at home, done really well against the Miami Dolphins, I believe three or four straight games over his number. And that's Shakir, Khalil Shakir, over 40.5 receiving yards. Be my bet, whether you want to look at the receptions, whether you want to look at the yards. That's kind of been the number that's popped up on me right away. And I love how we used to have to wait a while for these props to come out. And now some shops post them almost immediately. So he'll be a guy. And in a game like this with a point spread that high, you expect the ball to be kind of passed around, you know, multiple guys getting targeted. So three straight hits in three meetings against Miami. And he's also hit this in three straight home games.
One thing we should note about the Miami Dolphins and the Buffalo Bills when they play each other, Tua gets hurt all the time. Tua's had really bad luck. Matt Milano, I think Milano might have injured him twice, actually. Like, you know, I know Tua, it's hard to keep up with Tua's injuries, but he's had a couple of significant ones against the Bills. Like, the Bills have crushed him twice. He's been, like, seriously injured twice playing against the Buffalo Bills. So there's not he does not have happy memories playing against the Bills. You know, the Bills aren't invincible, right? I mean, they played better than I thought they would, actually, against the Jets. Or I guess the Jets were just that bad. I thought, you know, the Jets were actually going to punch back a little bit, but Justin Fields is sort of like Geno Smith. He might have one good game or something, but, like, he's not really good. And there's a reason, like, multiple coaches can't be wrong. There's sort of a reason why Fields coaches just kick in and go, man, all right, like, he just can't throw the ball. He just does not see the open wide receivers. Cam, what's your early pick for the Dolphins and the Bills? It's at 11.5 right now.
I always look to take a dog, Marenzi, but how can I take the fish in this spot? They're a brutal football team right now. I actually worry about, too, his future in the National Football League. And great point by McInnes. Hill's body language is absolutely disgusting. This whole team, they're barking at each other. It's a bad scene. At the Bills, what do? I know it's a divisional game, but they can beat up on bad teams, as we saw against the Jets. I think the Bills can win this game by three touchdowns, and McDaniel will be gone. But you're right, Gabe. He will get a coordinator job.
Oh, he'll definitely get a coordinator job. And, you know, even what happens is, I don't think he'll take it, but a lot of times coaches get let go and then they just get hired as, like, an assistant advisor to another team, like, right away in season. Like, there'll be, like, another coach in the league to go, man, McDaniel's really smart. He knows a lot of stuff. I want him helping me. Right. And guys will do it. And then they'll get a coordinator job after. But yeah, I got to believe I'm leaning more so with the Bills are going to finish him off. I think the Dolphins are just so gutless that there's nothing they can do about it. Like, it's up to the Bills. Like, if the Bills show up and just play, you know, if the Bills really bring it, they're going to win, like, 28-3 or something, or 35-3. the question is, do they want to get McDaniel fired? I mean, if I was McDermott, we kidded about this yesterday, but if I was McDermott, I'd almost want McDaniel in the division still. I wouldn't want him to get fired.
That's the best. Don't beat him up. I want him around.
Yeah, I'd be like, we played him one more time. Like, that's, you know what I mean? We played him again. All right, before we get to the CFL, McInnes, do you have a early lean in the National Football League that you like?
So far, I'm still diving into a lot of it, but one bet that I locked in here, Gabe, and it's the only one I can really mention right now, would be the Pittsburgh New England under 44.5 here. Look, who would have thought there'd be a world where we're talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers, Rodgers to Metcalf, you know, like, and putting up points? I mean, it sounds kind of crazy to say, but I think that we've seen points early on with the Pittsburgh Steelers, especially in that week one game. We saw a flat game in week one for the offense at Gillette for the Patriots. Then they put up points against the Dolphins. But let's ask ourselves, how good is this Dolphins defense? Talking about Mike McDaniel getting fired and the offense not looking good. Well, it doesn't really help when you let the Patriots score that many points on you. So I think that in this particular matchup, we're going to see kind of regression from this New England offense right away, going back at home. More of a boring style of offense again, trying to establish the run. They haven't been running the ball very well to try and establish that run at home. I think Pittsburgh, New England goes under 44.
Andrew McInnes kicking it with us on the Twisted Tuesday edition of Sports Rage podcast. Montreal Alouettes and the Toronto Argonauts. Montreal just hung 48 on the board to get McLeod Bethel-Thompson back in the lineup, who really wasn't that good earlier in the year, but you know, being around the team and studying and learning the playbook, and right, the CFL season's a long one, and there's always time for redemption in this league. Toronto, right now, are back in the mix as well. The CFL is really a lot of fun right now, even though the NFL is back. I've been addicted to the CFL because the games have been so fun. And I tell you what, guys, I love the over 50.5 on Friday night. Now that, you know, we see that the Alouette offense is healthy again, they've got their weapons back, they can put points up on the board, and the Toronto Argonauts can score on anybody, and they can't really stop anybody. I'm surprised, Andrew and Cam, that the total is 50.5 there and not higher, but the Alouettes are 4.5-point favorites. Argos get 4.5, 50.5. Critical game also for the BC Lions. BC lose, and then they win. They lose, and then they win. They beat a bad team, they lose to a good team, and they've got to string together a couple of wins, BC, to comfortably get into the playoffs right now. They're getting 5.5 against Calgary on Friday night, 54.5. Great Friday night games, guys. What's your pick, McInnes? Early leans.
Well, I'll tell you what, but an hour ago, Dave Naylor tweeted out no Nick Arbuckle at Toronto practice on Tuesday, hearing he has a calf strain out 2 to 4 weeks. Chad Kelly is present, but not in a jersey. I don't even remember how to pronounce this guy's name. Jared Doge or Doge or however you say his name. I'm fading Doge. Him.
Where Doge is tech.
Doge.
So the end of the day, guys, I went to click -125 on the money line for the Alouettes. And they said, no, you can't get 125, Andrew. We'll give you 175. And
I said, 205 no,
now. I don't understand,
McInnes, why I don't get is why Chad Kelly isn't ready.
Exactly.
He was supposedly ready last week, or not ready, but he was cleared last week to play, right? Like, so this, you know, the it was done. He's cleared. He's eligible to play. Arbuckle had been playing well, so it wasn't like, all right, listen, we're going to rush him in here right now. But now it's sort of been 2 weeks around. I guess he's injured. I guess there's something holding him back, but I just find it strange considering the guys have played all year.
Yeah, at first I was like, oh, man, go Arbuckle. You know what I mean? Like, let's not have Chad Kelly come in and ruin it. Arbuckle's been quietly one of the better QBs in the league this year. But then it's like, all right, you know, you talk all this talk about how you belong in the NFL, and you've had a new injury every 3 weeks. So I don't know when you're going to get into the CFL.
And you haven't played. You're getting injured training.
Yeah. Moral of the story, though, guys, that number will get to 6, 6.5. I strongly believe it. This is why I love doing the spot with you on Tuesday. And I'm on -3.5 at -105. I think that number will move. You guys know how it is. Second college football starts, second NFL starts. Nobody's really betting these numbers up until game day. Not really seeing much game day, much movement throughout the week. So I do like the Alouettes. And that BC Lions and Calgary Stampeders game, I'll probably look towards the BC team total again, because why wouldn't you? I mean, no matter what this team does, covering spreads or not, they're putting up points.
They're putting up. They score 32 or more every week. BC Lions team total. And one thing too with the backups and the backups, how backup quarterbacks have lost games in the CFL this year. So when you start to get to the third string, it starts to really get ugly and turn into a disaster. You want to have confidence in them and faith in them, but it blows up on you. Winnipeg at Ottawa. Speaking of blowing up, Ottawa's, they're the one team that's kind of done now, right? They've just lost too many games. It's going to be tiebreakers. Ottawa are all but done. And they're 1.5-point favorites against the Bombers on Saturday. And then you get Edmonton, who got dealt a devastating hand last week against Hamilton. This is sort of a must-win last stand. Like, they're all kind of beginning to become like playoff eliminators, guys, right? Yeah, we're running out of racetrack now in the CFL. These games all matter. The tiebreakers will kill you, like, if you don't win the season series. BC are in a pretty good situation right now to, you know, as far as the crossover. But what's your take, McInnes, on Saturday's games?
I found this super interesting. You know how some teams do well out of a bye week. Some teams do well going into a bye week. I got to shout out my CFL podcast co-host, Bobby DeBoe. He sent me this one. 3-16 ATS is the record of teams prior to bye weeks. And we capitalized on that one last week with the Montreal Alouettes. So I'm going to bet that once again this week, and I'm going to take Winnipeg to win their matchup against the Ottawa Redblacks, albeit it's pretty much a pick 'em price here. I'm going to back Winnipeg. And you know what? If I do it again, I probably will never back the Winnipeg Blue Bombers with Chris Streveler or a backup ever in my life again. And I can let you guys hold me to that. But at the end of the day, we're pretty much getting an all-time low number here on the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. I don't know if you guys agree with me. This is not the Bombers of 4 years ago, but this is still a Bombers team that can probably win against the Red Blacks straight up.
I got to be honest. My level of dislike for Chris Streveler is kind of getting to be unhealthy right now. And I don't like, I know it's just a game and all this. Yeah, he's a good guy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But like, he sucks. He's no good. Like, he's really, really bad. And there's like a lot of, like, every week too, I'm like, you know, nah, he's going to put it together this week. It's not that bad. Like, it's frustrating because he'll make a few plays and it'll be like, all right, look, you threw a pretty good ball there. Just, you know, and then as the game goes on, it just starts to implode. It's amazing how bad he's gotten, how quickly. Like, I swear, guys, like, I was on the air during a Bomber game and he was like just sucking it up. And I said, you know, I thought he was like, you know, 35 or 34, or 36. Like, I didn't realize like the dude's like 29 or 30 or something. Like, he's not that old, actually. I thought he was older because, you know, he was in the NFL before and I just thought he was older than he was. He's not. And man, he's bad. Like, Dustin Crum's better than he is. And people criticize Dustin Crum, McInnes, that Dustin Crum can't throw the ball. And Dustin Crum can't throw the ball. Right? Like, you know, but I'd rather have Dustin Crum because at least Crum runs and Crum is younger. He's got an edge. I guess that, you know, they're the best comparison, actually. Dustin Crum is a younger Chris Streveler. They both suck, but, right? I mean, Dustin Crum isn't very good either. Let's be real. You can't win football games with him as a starting quarterback. There's a reason why they have four wins. But he's
his decision-making, Gabe, is just so brutal. That's the worst part about watching Streveler. Like, the more I watch football, the more I learn about the game, the more I realize, like, going through your reads and that stuff. Like, when you watch Chris Streveler go through his reads, it's almost like your internet's going out and your TV is lagging. Like, he takes forever to go through his read. It's like, dude, you're going to throw a pick. The guy is right. You're going to throw a pick. He's right there.
He's so slow. And then he lobs the ball in across the field,
his mechanics are awful. Like, when I watch Streveler throw, it's like everything's into the ground. There's no arc. Like, it's really shocking. When you watch him throw, I'm like, man, this guy throws a bad ball. Like, it's awful. Like, it's inconsistent too.
And Crum too. Crum just takes off right away. So he drops back, and if the first read isn't there, he sort of panics and takes off. But Crum can throw the ball at least. Like, I don't mind like Crum's velocity. Like, Crum can throw a fastball. Like, Streveler just lobs it. Like, yeah, Streveler literally just sort of lobs the ball in like he's lost his arm strength. Dustin Crum can throw a fastball, but if he throws it deep, like, God knows where it's going to go. The problem is in the CFL, it's just so hard. Like, to, I'm not saying Dustin Crum sucks, but in the CFL, it's really hard to score on like a 16-play drive. Like, a classic example, when we were talking about this, the Raiders last night. They had an 11-minute drive, man, like 18 plays and stuff. They didn't score. They got a field goal out of it. It's like, good for you. You can pick up 3 yards and like little 4 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards, 3 yards. You got to do it 20 times to score a touchdown. It's really hard to do. That's why these teams, man, it, you know, if you don't get chunk plays in modern football, you're simply not going to win games. We'll wrap it up with a golf media story, actually. Amazon Prime continues to be aggressive in the sports landscape. And this is interesting because the Masters is so antiquated. So the Masters sort of steps into the, you know, into the new future here in 2025. Amazon Prime Video, the streaming giant, has partnered with CBS Sports and ESPN. And Amazon will stream. The Masters will stream live on Prime Video from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. on April 9th and April 10th, leading in on both days into ESPN's late afternoon, evening coverage. So basically, guys, we have complained for years about how ridiculous it is that the Masters did not put the opening holes on TV and or, you know, you had one hole or they followed this group or whatnot. But Cam, for the first time, it's now just going to be broadcast, but on Amazon Prime.
I love it. And this is the problem with some of these tournaments, Gabe. You're picking it up. Oh, let's just show all the guys who are finished. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could do so many hours of coverage, yet you put them in this window, and they're like, oh, now we don't have commercials. Yeah, well, who cares? I haven't seen half of the field and what they did and watched their shots. This is good for business, especially if they go, you know, morning tea time to night and extend the coverage. And that's the whole problem with golf. Even when I'm watching Golf Channel, some of these tournaments, they pick it up way too late. They need more coverage.
Yeah, it's always baffled me, McKinnis. It's like showing the Super Bowl, like the Masters. But, yeah, we don't show the first 7 minutes out of the Super Bowl because of tradition. Yes. We don't put it on TV because of tradition. It'd be like, well, that's kind of dumb. You should probably put it on TV. Yeah, but now, listen, it'll be on Amazon Prime 2 hours a day. So Thursday and Friday, not weekend coverage. But for the Masters, this is a pretty big step into the future for them, actually. They've always been reluctant. They hate anything new. So for the Masters to sign with a streaming service lets me know that 30 years from now, Jim Nance's son will be doing the Masters on Netflix. Hello, friends. I'm Jim Nance Jr. Welcome to Netflix coverage of the Masters.
Hello, friends.
I got to tell you, we're lucky guys in Canada because, like, when I hear people complaining about, well, this night I have to watch Monday Night Football on this channel and this subscription, and the Americans complaining, like, yeah, we've got
you're right,
it.
McKinnis.
Like,
you're right. Because TSN and whatever, these guys pick up everything too. And, like, no, yeah. You're right. And there's so many different channels for this stuff. And even for golf, they have, hey, do you have Peacock? I'm like, nah, I want to watch it on like a regular channel, the Golf Channel or NBC, CBS or whatever. So, yeah, it's an absolute gong show sometimes for American,
like,
viewers.
Americans are getting fleeced. From what it sounds like to me, you'd have to buy YouTube TV or ESPN Plus to get some stuff. But then, oh no, on Thursday night, I can't watch it.
If you legally, technically wanted to watch every game in the National Football League, and you had to purchase all the different streaming services they were on and cable, etc., it's like $1,600 a year now, McKinnis. It's a lot of money for the NFL. Like, if you don't want to miss a game, type of deal. Right now, obviously, there's ways people go out and stuff, but it's a sad world, yeah, when we're getting to the point where, like, it's going to cost you. Just wait till the NBA season starts. And you are right. Canadian fans of the NFL and Canada are very lucky. They don't have to worry about all the games on Amazon or it's on YouTube or it's on this. It's just actually on cable TV all the time because all these streaming deals are for the U.S. rights only. But I'll be curious to see with the NBA season coming up. What starts to happen, because the NBA is even more diabolical. Like, the NBA is on like 9-10 platforms this year, and it's going to cost a lot of money for fans. And Adam Silver last week upset people when he was asked, what do you say to the fans that just can't afford all these streaming services to watch your games? And he said, watch our highlights on TikTok.
I couldn't believe that.
Can you imagine if Bettman said
arrogance.
That? If Bettman said that, dude, like, people would have crewed. Like, imagine if Rob Manfred said, well, yeah, I know people can't afford to watch our games, but you can watch highlights on Twitter.
Exactly.
Like people would have killed Manfred for that. But you're Silver so really right. didn't get ripped all that much. He really is actually one of the worst. He might be the worst commissioner, to be honest.
I think he is, Gabe. Great call by you.
He's a nice guy, so people don't call him out.
Well, I grew up playing basketball, right? And a lot of my buddies played hockey. And they, you know, everybody's heard this that's played basketball before, where people would say to them, oh, if you want to watch basketball, just turn it on in the fourth quarter or turn it on with 3 minutes to go. You can't do that with hockey because it's not as many goals or points, right? Well, I think Adam Silver just proved all those hockey guys comments right. He literally just instead of having our back, he just proved all their points that
he
it's
even
a admitted. Sport.
Yeah, he even said, oh, you know what? You don't need to see the whole game. And he basically, you know, it was crazy. He was right in the sense that kids don't like watch the whole game. So he sort of knows it. And he said, he goes, well, to be honest with you, a lot of our fans consume our stuff through TikTok and highlights and Twitter and post-game packages and not the actual game. And he's kind of right about it. But like you said, Andrew, he's basically saying, you guys don't need to watch the game. All the cool stuff's going to be in the clips online anyways.
Well, there's guys like, you ever hear of Flight? You know who that guy is? He's like a really popular YouTuber and streamer.
Yeah.
So he says that he does this. I don't know if I always believe this, but he live reacts to highlights. So he says that he didn't watch the game. Sometimes it's hard to believe it, but he'll say, no, I didn't watch the game.
Oh, I believe him. Yeah, no, I believe that. Yeah.
So he's going to live react with you guys, with the guys that are watching his stream. Guys. We're all going to watch the highlights together, and he's going to go crazy. So he's watching the Warriors-Cavaliers like several years ago, and he's instead of watching a full hours of a game, he's just watching it in 4 minutes.
Well, we killed Silver for it, but he was actually right. That's the whole thing. It was kind of sad but true. There was the way he said it. It was just his wording and his callousness about it. Like he really should have worded it better. But hey, fact of the matter is, guys, the Blue Jays games in 30, Blue Jays in 30.
Yeah.
It gets higher ratings than the game does. And it's the same thing in a lot of other markets, actually. The modern people have less attention span than a goldfish. You think they have the patience to sit there through 2.5 hours of a baseball game? They don't, right? Only the most diehard baseball geek fan can last 9 innings of every pitch of every, you know what I mean? And they know it. And like I said, these little 30 minute game wrap up things get massive ratings, man. Chicago started it. The White Sox were the first ones to do it. And they realized, they were like, man, we're getting bigger ratings for this 30 for 30 package that we do after the game than the actual game. And the Blue Jays caught on, and now almost everybody does it. All right, so we're done here. Thanks, McKinnis. Check out Andrew over at wagertalk.com. Look forward to talking some hockey around the corner with Andrew. Catch Cam on Sports Grid on Wednesday night. And, of course, we'll be back with the Wicked Wednesday edition of the podcast. We'll see you on the grid. Other than that, you're on your own. Later.